Radio.
Yourself the man. What happened when you got that letter in your hand? A resignation, if that's what you want to call it. I'm walking, I'm leaving all this foolishness.
Hi listeners, this is Martin and I welcome you to Kaput Radio. This show is of no particular theme, except for some ideas and laughs to share. Have fun.
Today I fired my boss and it felt so good.
Alright guys, this is as bad as it gets, man. They start occupying the kids Sesame Street, it's bad. Look at this. Occupy Wall Street is a major movement both on the streets and on the web, but it isn't getting the media attention it deserves. Why? Because it doesn't resonate with the kids. The kids drive the market and therefore the media, but they have absolutely no interest in seeing politically charged 20-something sprayed in the face with mace. Pepper spray snuffleupagus, however, and you get yourself a protest ready for prime time. Look what they're doing to Big Bird. Big Bird is out there showing his stuff. Got the fist up. Poor Grover being manhandled by the NYPD. Look at Oscar in the garbage though there. Looking, he's just looking kind of scared. And then look at this. We've got Elmo being tied up. Who's that? Bird? Bird doesn't look happy at all. Oh. He's crying.
Wow, that's great.
Cookie Monster needs more cookies.
I had a song.
Oh, this is terrible. More cookies. I don't know who that is, but he don't look happy. And there's Snuffleupagus. He's been pepper sprayed. You can tell by looking at his eyes. It don't look good.
It works.
The pepper spray has come out. Look at this. They're just...
Hey, now hold on just a minute.
Yes?
I know what this is. This is called Marxism, buddy. Stalin killed 800 billion people because of ideas like this.
My father died in the gulag.
Hold on, hold on.
Communist, fascist. You don't like America, you should just leave.
Everybody just calm down.
To the new world order. To the new world order.
And as the irrationality of the audience grew, shocked and confused, suddenly the narrator suffered a fatal heart attack. And the seemingly communist propaganda film was no more.
You know, I've said that sort of thing to people in think tank type of situations and, you know, these Club of Rome types and so forth. Marxist. What? Marxist? Where did that come from? You know, they got this icon they hold on to as their holy grail. And it's such an easy one, you know.
People ask if I'm a socialist or a communist or a capitalist, and I say I'm none of the above. And why do you think that those are the only options? All of those political constructs were created by writers who assumed that we lived on a planet of infinite resources. Not a one of those political philosophies even contemplates that there might be a shortage of anything.
I believe that communism, socialism, free enterprise, fascism are part of social evolution. That you can't take a giant step from one culture to another, but there are in-between systems.
Before there's any ism, we've got a life ground, and the life ground is, as I just described most easily, is all the conditions required to take your next breath, and that involves the air you breathe, the water you get, the safety you have, the education you can access, all these things that we share and use and that no life in any culture can do without. So we've got to reset down to the life ground, and the life ground is no longer any ism. It's life value analysis.
I've always felt sorry for Belgium.
Firstly, because Belgium invented French fries, and then the French passed them off as their own, denying Belgium, firstly, this beautiful culinary gift to the world, not to mention the billions in commission. Every time any chip is sold in the world, the French get a little bit of scratch out of it. And another reason why I feel sorry for Belgium. Belgium has been used as a kind of template for natural disasters. Oh, a landslide the size of Belgium. A flood the size of Belgium. An area of devastation the size of Belgium. A swarm of bees the size of Belgium. How must that eat away at your national identity? Belgium, a nation of 10 million people, 10 million individuals with thoughts, hopes, ambitions, dreams, reduced to an international unit of despair. But you know what? Belgium's having the last laugh, because Belgium has not had a government now for the longest time that countries have never had governments for, and yet it has the highest rate of economic growth in the Eurozone. And this is the best bit, right? The fact that it doesn't have a government has created the conditions for greater financial growth. The lack of government is making it more money. How cool is that? So we don't need all these austerity packages. None of that, that's not working. The cuts don't work, they just make it worse. Let's follow the Belgian model. Abolish central government. Have some local administration. Have the civil service. They'll trundle on to doomsday. All we need is a way of collecting money to finance all this. And do what we did in Belgium. Have a royal decree. The king sorted out the stuff in Belgium when there was no government. The queen can do that. She'd be, look, her face is on the money. Look, she's looking at us from the money in a kind of impassive yet slightly disapproving way. And what does it say? I promise to pay the bearer on demand £10. Well, we can collect a levy on the actual money, send that to the administration, abolish central government. No, we don't need the cheesy-faced chiselers. I'd be quite happy with this, right? This is my plan. On the note, on the £10 note, all the currency, it says something like, I promise to pay the bearer on demand the sum of £9.92. with an 8p handling charge. Problem solved.
Mr. Murdoch, are you aware that your newspaper, The Australian, currently has a readership of just 4 people?
Yes.
Which means that even the staff who actually work for the paper can't bring themselves to read it.
Please, I can address these in some detail.
No, The Australian is your father's vanity project. I want him to answer. I mean, why would you hire a columnist as pompous and unreadable as Philip Adams?
Because I was asked to.
Who by? By Adams himself?
Yes.
And do you agree that Adams helped trigger the paper's decline with his self-absorbed waffle?
Oh, he did indeed.
And what about these rumours, Mr. Murdoch, that you don't think the paper is pro-Abbott enough? Is it true you've hired Tony Abbott himself to take over as editor?
We've made no decision on that.
There's no decision on that.
If he does take over, can you at least promise that he won't ever make Bronwyn Bishop one of his page 3 girls?
Absolutely.
Studies around the world found that literacy rates are fast dropping, thereby producing inevitably a conundrum. When the last literate person gets buried, no one will be able to write about it. However, with the proliferation of social media, Twitteracy is growing. In fact, do we really need a clumsy lot of 26 letters in the alphabet? Couldn't we increase the communication productivity by removing some letters rarely used and easily substituted with existing ones, when 99% of human communication needs are covered? Interesting questions follow from this. When will the first Twitteracy award handed out, and for what area of Twittering? Will there be a Nobel Prize for Twitteracy? Does Facebook, besides your face, really need any text entries? Isn't the face telling enough? Can face porn be even better than butt porn? Will there be future studies showing that Twitteracy rates are also beginning to drop because of early development readaptation of human fingers? Is a binary communication more important than speaking with your mother? There are lots of new questions arising from this one communication study alone. when it comes to the Chinese alphabet, oh my God. That alphabet is just too unwieldy to ever make fun with. Can you imagine the future of human communications? Do we actually want to say, "Yes, I'm okay, thanks for asking," or something like, "I don't care what you presently do, I'm in the shower"? Are we, a highly accomplished civilization, really doing this? Further studies will be needed to answer at least part of these questions.
I texted you on a Monday, but you did not get my text till the Tuesday because of a network problem. Texted you on a Wednesday, but I did not know that you'd call because your SIM card was not correctly installed. Oh, no, no, no. You texted me on a Thursday to say that you would meet me at the shopping center. And I texted you back and said, "Where should I meet you?" And you said, "Dixon's." But I did not know which Dixon's you meant. Was it the one inside the door or the one further up by Curry's? These are my worries. Texted me on a Monday to say that it was over, but I did not understand because you used predictive text and it was
Leave Jones alone. Jones has had a lot on his plate at the moment because not only did he lose his crusade against the carbon tax today, but he's been frantically rehearsing, this is true, rehearsing for his role in a new production of the musical Annie.
And this is just beautiful. I mean, it's a dream come true for Alan. I think he's perfect for the part. Although I've got to say, based on the previews, I can't help getting the feeling that maybe he's hijacked the production to push some of his personal views.
The sun will come out tomorrow. Bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow there'll be sun.
Yes, but the sun will be the same temperature it's always been. In fact, if you look at the data from the scientists who actually know what they're talking about, they'll tell you that the sun will be the same temperature 8 billion years. 8 billion years! No!
Till there's none. When I'm stuck with a day that's grey and lonely.
If the day's grey, it means the earth's cooling, not warming. I think you missed that, Annie. Annie, liar.
The sun will come out tomorrow, so you gotta hang on to tomorrow. Come what may.
Just look at these figures, will you? Humans make up 0.0008% of carbon pollution. Now, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Good afternoon, I'm Brooke Alvarez, and once again, I'm just chatting with you, the viewer, in a relaxed setting so that you can get to know the real me and I'll appear more human, therefore helping my ratings. So we have a really great question now off of Facebook today. Philip Vernon says, "I'm a big fan. How do you maintain your impeccable appearance and amazing hair as our entire degenerate civilization is collapsing around you?" Well, Philip, even though an increasing number of signs point to the fact that the end of the world is nigh, that does not mean we can just let ourselves go. Do you remember when all those birds dropped dead in Arkansas last year? Well, even though it was an obvious sign of the coming apocalypse, I still spent my normal 4.5 hours flat ironing every individual strand of hair and shellacking it into place because I'm professional. And for those of you out there who are waiting for the end of days in a bathrobe and slippers, pull yourselves together. Put on a sharp suit, pluck your eyebrows, bleach your veneers, and take the world ending with a little bit of dignity. But since you asked, here's a global warming beauty tip to use as civilization crumbles. Tornadoes are quite rejuvenative for the skin. If you stick your face right into one, it will slough off the dead skin cells right there and then. Leave you very fresh-faced. Okay, thanks, Philip. If you'd like to ask me a question, tweet it to my handle, at Brooke Alvarez, or post it to my Facebook wall.
Hello, this is Bill Bailey here in the bunker. Not the bunker of dreams. I let the squirrels claim that. No, this is the bunker of reality. You see, the Mayans have predicted that the end of the world as we know it will occur on December the 21st, 2012. 21, 12, 12. You see, there's a pattern, a mystical sense of inevitability about it. And it's a very important date. I have a very handy way of remembering it. Blackjack, sound check. Blackjack, 21. Sound check, 1212. 21, 1212. Blackjack, sound check. And on that day, scientists agree that there will be an unusually high amount of solar activity. The planets will align in a certain way. There will be neutrinos immersing the Earth in a deadly wave of invisible destruction. The Earth's crust will destabilize. The poles will reverse polarity. North will be south, up will be down, day will be night. You won't be able to work out which way around the batteries go in those little units you get in the back of novelty clocks. So time will reverse, we'll go back. We will be recast to a pre-industrial age, pre-phones, electricity, broadband, TV, no cars. No spoons, weirdly, just sticks with like broadened ends. But strangely, Velcro. Because the Mayans actually invented Velcro. And when I say they invented Velcro, they just came up with one bit of it, which was the fuzzy bit. And unfortunately for the Mayans, the hook bit, that wasn't invented until 1948, which ironically they predicted. But it didn't occur to them to use that prediction and create Velcro. So, because that was... That was one of their flaws. I mean, all civilizations are flawed, but the Mayans were very much like that. You know, they thought so much in the future, they weren't very practical on a day-to-day basis. Always thinking, you know, head in the clouds, and that actually made them quite annoying. They were very bad at keeping appointments. If you arrange to meet the Mayans, say, oh, I'll meet you tomorrow at 2 o'clock to go through the plans, I don't know, for the new temple extension or something, and they'd say, you'd definitely be there at 2, and they go, yeah. You go, no, definitely be there at 2, and they go, thinking about, I don't know, the invention of the stapler or something. So anyway, the next day you'd be there on the, I don't know, sacrificial patio area, and no sign of them. After 2, no, nothing. 3, eventually 3:15, the Mayans would saunter up. Where were you? Ah, we predicted we would meet today at 3:15. Yeah, well you might have told me, you might have shown me some sort of indication that you're gonna be 3:15. Ah. And they just do that again, they're really annoying, like, yeah. And then people just get annoyed and say, well, look, you're head in the clouds. Never mind the hovercraft or the flipping toaster that you're predicting. How about turning up on time? And then the minds will go, you're angry, aren't you? Yes, I am. Well, I predicted you'd be angry. Oh, did you? A lot of people got so frustrated with the minds, they would just go up to them and say, oh, hello, are you a mind? And they go, yeah. And then they'd whack them around the head with a cricket bat and say, you didn't see that coming, did you?
Your name is Chris.
Yes, that's right.
And what do you do, Chris?
I'm a minister.
Okay, and your name is Scott, yeah?
I'm Scott, yes, good evening.
And are you a minister too, Scott?
No, I'm not. No, I'd very much like to be.
Well, maybe one day.
Yeah, we live in hope.
Now, you two have chosen as your special subject tonight the processing of asylum seekers.
That's right, yes.
Okay, let's just test your buzzers there, Chris. Good. Scott? Hang on, they're both making the same sound.
We're making the same sound? Same
yeah,
sound.
It's not going to work.
Well, maybe I'll make mine twice.
Okay, that's good. Okay, so your time starts now. Gentlemen, if asylum seekers arrive in Australia illegally by boat... Scott?
Stop the boats.
Wait till I finish the question, Scott. Can you, if you don't
There
mind?
Won't be any need for the question. If you stop the boats, there'll be no need for a question. Stopping the boats is the key thing.
How are you going to stop the boat, Scott?
With a boat stopper.
A boat stopper?
Yeah, a boat stopping device of some kind.
What sort of boat stopping device do you have in mind?
I don't know. I'll talk to Tony. I'm pretty sure he's got one somewhere.
Yeah, look, maybe if you could just let me get the question out first, Scott, that'd be helpful. Okay, gentlemen, if asylum seekers arrive in Australia illegally by boat, where would be the best place to process them? Chris?
Malaysia.
No. Scott?
Nauru.
No, they've arrived in Australia. Where would be the best place to process them here? Chris?
Denmark?
Not Denmark. No,
it's Nauru.
No, Scott.
It's Nauru.
No,
Nauru is the answer. Belgium.
I've already said that's not the answer, Scott.
Luxembourg. Nauru.
No, it's not Nauru.
Saturn. Nauru. Is it Saturn?
It's not bloody Nauru, Scott.
Jupiter. Nauru.
Okay, look, I think we'll just move on. What should we do, gentlemen, about the thousands of people who arrive in Australia by flying and overstaying their visas?
Stop the boats.
No, they've arrived in planes.
Stop the planes.
No, they've already arrived, Chris. The question is, what do we do once they're here?
Malaysia. You send
Nauru.
Them to Malaysia.
No,
they go to Malaysia.
Nauru.
The answer is Nauru. They get processed
Neither
in Malaysia.
Of you know the answer to this. Stop the buzzing.
What? I give up. Room service? No, no one ordered any sandwiches. No. I wouldn't mind a cup of coffee. Have they got anything Malaysian? Malaysia?
Tell you a story about me. Captain Thunderbolt was his name. They all just hammered over their money. The women all remembered his name. Oh, they'd say, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My lords, ladies, fellow party workers, I am a golfer. But I'm also a conservative, and the conservatives are back in power. What a wonderful word. But with a new initiative, and above all, a new style. And we are mostly concerned with two main issues. Firstly, immigration. Now, people really do get this party wrong every time on this issue, don't they? We don't think immigrants are animals, for God's sake. I know a lot of immigrants personally, and they're perfectly nice people. They're black, of course, which is a shame. But honestly, some of them can do some jobs almost as well as white people, and we acknowledge this. Now, a lot of immigrants are Indians and Pakistanis, for instance, and I like curry. I do. But now that we've got the recipe... really any need for them to stay? Conservatives understand these problems, you see. Like we understand young criminals, another very emotive issue. This party feels that we've been just a little too soft on these bastards. Mr. Whitelaw has spoken of the short, sharp shock treatment. And his introduction of the 24,000-volt electric chair to two Home Office detention centres begins next week. On a purely experimental basis, of course. If it doesn't work, then of course we will be more than prepared to revert to the old liberal, wishy-washy, socialist, nigger-loving, red, left-wing, homosexual, commie ways of the recent past. Please, let's have a chance. It may be a tough road, we know, but don't forget, it is easier for a rich man to pass through the eye of a needle than it is for a camel to... than it is for a camel to...
This next piece of music... It was actually the news theme for ITN News between 1959 and 1982. And it's so relentlessly jolly. the news must have been much nicer then. It must have been a nicer time all round. Because you can't imagine listening to this theme and hearing the headlines of today. It just wouldn't work. This is a marvellous piece of music. It's called Non-Stop. A massive car bomb exploded in Baghdad today. Kyrgyzstan has gone nuclear. Bird flu is affecting all of us. It looks like we'll all be dead in 3 years. The entire system of money has collapsed. Governments warn of a return to a shiny bead-based bartering system. America has begun bombing Iran. The Third World War is imminent. We're all going to die!
There is not going to be any recovery. This is not some long depression that we're someday going to pull out of. I think the next phase we're going to see after the next round of economic collapse is massive civil unrest, when employment checks stop being paid because the states have no money left.
And when things get so bad that people lose confidence in their elected leaders, they will demand change. If we don't kill each other in the process or destroy the environment, I'm just afraid that we might get to the point of no return. And that bothers me no end. We do all we can to avoid that condition.
This is a monetary paradigm that will not let go until it's killed the last human being.
You were listening to Kaput Radio, and you heard contributions mostly found on Google, I admit. First up, the Wall Street Protest official song, I Fired My Boss Today. Mixed together with Occupy Sesame Street, It's Gone Too Far. Added samples from Zeitgeist Moving Forward movie about isms and moral protest to our finance system and resulting culture. Then Bill Bailey talks about Belgium, followed by the Murdoch Files, courtesy of The Chaser. And then you heard my musings about digital communications, reinforced by Bill Bailey's Twitter song. Followed by a sample from the Chaser comedy group about hate media personality Alan Jones, who has been sufficiently published in last week's episode, just if you like to hear the anal drive again. But continuing with The Secret of Good Looks During End Times by The Onion News, added on comes Bill Bailey's Trouble with the Mayans, then Mick Deagles from BluesDoctor.com sings about Ned Kelly and Thunderbolt, leading to Australia's water protection politics presented by Clark and Dore. A bit more Ned Kelly leads us to Rowan Atkinson presenting the British Conservative Conference. Phew, and ending with another sample from Zeitgeist Moving Forward movie. Thanks for listening. I hope you had some fun. I'm Martin, and you can catch me again next time.